Hello and welcome to Revolutions Per Minute here on KALW. I'm Sarah Cahill, and tonight we have an interesting show. In about an hour, composer Laura Kaminsky will be here to talk about her opera As One, which had its West Coast premiere today with West Edge Opera. In a few minutes, I'll be speaking by phone with the writer and pianist Jack Cole about his new book, That Iron String, about the sometimes sinister world of classical pianists. I'm Sarah Cahill, and with me on the phone now is Jack Cole. Are you there?
I am, Sarah.
Hi, Jack. Thank you so much for being with us. You have a new novel. I don't often interview writers on the show, but you're a writer and pianist, and you've written this book called That Iron String. It's really fascinating, and it sort of brings together your dual talents of pianist and writer. Tell us about this book and how you... Well, first of all, I want to hear about your own experience as a pianist and how you started writing this book, which actually Vladimir Horowitz, who we just heard, would probably... A lot of it would resonate with him, I think. Some of the inner torments and also elation of being a classical concert pianist.
I'm flattered that you would wonder what Horowitz would think of it. And I can only imagine what he would think. I guess because as one of the pianists who can only imagine what it would like to have the facility of a Horowitz, I came at writing such a book from the point of view that many are addressing now in terms of the glut of pianists that are produced by the conservatory system and the competition system, and trying to imagine what might happen if a pianist of much greater facility than myself went through the competition circuit, as so many do now, and then experienced the triumph of victory and then the oftentimes regrettable trailing off of a career simply because there's always a new crop to replace so many pianists. And this occurred to me for myself when many years ago I was at a chamber music festival and I slipped through the cracks myself in terms of having enough time on the platform and duties to perform. Mm-hmm. And I remember the rather discreditable feeling of what Leopold Godowsky calls the only two feelings that sometimes a pianist has at a recital when watching others play, and it's either jealousy or boredom. And I'm afraid, to my discredit, I was feeling jealous a lot, thinking, wow, I don't have enough to do, and a lot of people are playing. And yet, my conscience kept reminding me that it really wasn't anyone's fault. Everyone was doing the best they could, and so was the industry, and as far as my talents could fuel what time I deserved. And then, in a kind of perverse moment, from a writerly perspective, I asked myself, what would a thriller novel's character, who was a madman, start to think if he was a much greater pianist than me? Who would he blame for his career if he felt he was as able as a Horowitz, if he imagined that? And yet, like so many competition pianists, his career starts to trail down. Who would he blame? And I thought, a la an Ahab out of a Moby Dick, he might personify music and try to somehow wreak his vengeance upon the actual art that seduced him into his career.
Yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Melville and Moby Dick, because there are passages where you describe the grand piano at length in ways that Melville describes his whale, as if by dissecting it and measuring it and analyzing it and writing exhaustively about it, you might somehow conquer it. And the title comes from Ralph Waldo Emerson, right? Know thyself, every heart vibrates to that iron string.
Yes, it does.
A beautiful, beautiful concept. And, yeah, so is the grand piano isn't the great white whale. It's really music that's the great white whale in this book.
Yes, it is. Because I realized if I risked demonizing the piano itself or a particular composer or a particular style, it would seem then I was opening myself up to the debate of opinion and whim as to what composer won my favor or not. And I didn't want it to seem like a polemic against any particular style. I wanted someone to take on music, because we all will encounter someone who, in a provincial moment, will say, oh, I don't like movies, or I don't like books, or I don't like art. But we almost never meet someone of any strain who says they don't like music. And I thought, what if someone is so steeped in it, it's their very, very life, and does everything they can to serve it, and is absolutely facile, as so many people are in the competition field now. How do we judge who really is better than the other? So many people are at a absolute top flight level, and yet someone emerges as a victor, and someone emerges as a second, third, or an ostensible loser. And yet, can we really say, by any real objective standard, who won? So again, I imagined a pianist who was such an idealist, he could not blame his fellow man and had an Emersonian notion of idealism and serving humanity, and yet felt somehow his career, again, was betrayed by the art itself, and in a perverse, mad thriller, old movie style way, he thought he would serve humanity and try to slay music as if it were a beast.
Yeah, and you write so eloquently about competitions, which are, you know, do launch careers, of course, but we all wonder in some sense what purpose they serve. And I had that experience of, you know, devoting 3 years to learning the repertoire for the Clara Haskell competition and flying to Switzerland, and then the whole thing, and you sort of steel yourself for that, for the preliminaries. And then I was eliminated after the first round. And it's this strange feeling of, you know, you have your Scarlatti Sonata and your Bach Prelude and Fugue and your Brahms Intermezzo. And I mean, you do the best you possibly can, and it's not good enough. And it really throws you into a sort of a quandary of self-doubt, I think.
I imagine. And may I ask, Sarah, and it's a privilege to ask someone of your stature, because you went through that process, and I've seen you play, and I had the privilege of seeing you at the Le Poisson Rouge in January.
Well, thank you.
For the Terry Riley program. When someone of your caliber plays, as in a Clara Haskell opening round, and I'm sure you accounted yourself as grandly as anyone, may I ask if any such thoughts ever crossed your mind of the notion of what seduced you down such a path? Have you ever had a moment where the music seemed at fault, or did you always feel perhaps it was the questionable system of the competition?
That's such a good question. I think it has to be the system, because we all love music. I mean, a Bach Prelude and Fugue. I mean, you have to have an intense private relationship to it. But I think we all have to consciously resist being jealous and resentful and bitter, seeing others. I mean, it does seem so arbitrary sometimes of
right.
Who gets ahead and who doesn't. And I mean, not only personally, but just in general, seeing who gets the Carnegie Hall recitals, and you think, why that person and not that person? And what about some sensitive soul like Dino Lupati? How would he have fared today?
Right, that's a wonderful question. Or any of the people for whom we are serving, the 19th century and 18th century and early 20th century, and other composers who I can't ever imagine the contemporary concert climate, wherein, I mean, do we really know to what extent the list would even have judged an ostensible failed performance as a failure? By his standards, we really don't know. And I'm wondering how healthy any of those people who we revere with such care at a competition, which is always thought to be necessarily such a note perfect rendering, would they even think that was healthy?
Yeah, good question. It's very, yeah. I think even the people who run the competitions and the jurors and everybody know that it's a really completely imperfect system. We should mention your website, jacksoncole.com, and that's Cole is spelled K-O-H-L.
Yeah.
And that has information about the book and how to order it from the Pawtucket Press.
Yes.
So this is about two cousins, both concert pianists. And it happens in 1970, which already was a very different time.
Well, they were born in 1970.
Born in 1970, right.
More or less around the turn of the century, our 21st century, it is set.
Yes, born in 1970. And So would you like to tell us a little bit about what happens? It has an incredible ending. I mean, really sort of mind-blowing.
Well, thank you. I guess mainly, Sarah, since we've been addressing the notion of competitions, and you're absolutely right, it's already been conceded by all of those who run competitions that, and no one is claiming that they don't have their flaws. So that certainly isn't my mission to try to, in any way, add to that complaint. What I thought would be fun in terms of a thriller and a philosophical speculative work would be to ask the question why so many people still go in to the field, though the warnings are given. And what would happen, again, if a madman entered that field and started to blame music. So I think it first was born as an idea in my head when I was a student at the Juilliard Pre-College.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a wonderful moment going into one of the studios where my lesson was to be had on a Saturday, when one could look out the windows down to where Tower Records used to be. And they were storing, for some inexplicable reason, in this studio where, as you well know, almost there's always two pianos in every teacher's studio. There was also a large, large black harpsichord. And I remember my teacher, his name was Leonard Eisner, looked at this harpsichord and shivered because it reminded him of Coffin. And that just stuck in my brain, that he said he wasn't comfortable, and he turned to the pianos and said, well, how much more beautiful they were. They were curved and lovely. And yet when I looked at them and their lids were opened, they too suggested to me somewhat an open casket.
Yeah.
And I think in my old movie lover's mind, because I think we all know oftentimes in old Warner Brothers films from the 40s, classical music used to be very much the grist for a lot of thrillers, where oftentimes music was even slightly personified as a character, as if it was a looming presence haunting people who were in classical music.
Right, and the other... Oh, sorry.
No, not at all.
The other thing about those old films is that there, many of them had a kind of sinister quality, and some of the pianists seemed to struggle with either mental illness or neurosis. There's a movie with Harvey Keitel where he's a pianist and hit man, or anyway, and Five Easy Pieces, mm-hmm. in a way, Jack Nicholson is sort of, has a very troubled relationship with music, and Mephisto Waltz with Alan Alda, which is sort of a bad movie, The Beast with Five Fingers. There's so many films about pianists that are very, very dark and troubled. And I wondered if you thought that some personalities like Glenn Gould sort of triggered that in the public consciousness.
Possibly. And I'm glad you mentioned Gould, because there's that little book by Jonathan Cott, Conversations with Glenn Gould, that I've always loved so much. And in part, I stole from a line in that book when Gould is talking about the notion of an ideal recreation that he first touched upon. I think it was an experience he had in Israel, where he mentioned that nothing was going well for him. And what he did was imagine his piano back home. I think it was an old, maybe Mason and Hamlin, that he felt that he was completely comfortable with. And he described how he tried to imagine that ideal physical recreation, though he was way far away in Israel, about to play on a piano that was foreign to him, and that to a certain extent he discovered in his mind how to constantly, perhaps, insofar that he could really do this, always summon an ideal realization. So I imagined a pianist for my own thriller who thought if he could always summon an ideal realization,
uh-huh.
in a super Gould sense, and then started to lose competitions after winning them, what could he blame if he was an idealist but the music? Hence I had my crazy thriller character then. And I, in the hope of not revealing too much about the story, you mentioned the end, and I'm flattered you got to the end. I don't want to say exactly how he concludes he can, for the sake of mankind, fight music. But needless to say, there is some murder and mayhem in the book, because, as we were discussing, to a great degree, I grew up watching many, many of the old films, as you say, where there's a sinister atmosphere. And I hope it isn't not found in the book, the kind of sense of fun sinister that was also in those films.
Yeah, yeah. You've gotten some great reviews. One said, I know of no other recent novel that gets to grips so well with the contradictions and heartache of a professional piano career. So that's great. And you have a wonderful quote from David Duval, who's the excellent pianist and Juilliard teacher and author of The Art of the Piano and other books. Mr. Cole has certainly grappled with the inner life of an aspiring pianist in which all of us can relate. So, yeah, congratulations on all those great reviews.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. It means a lot also coming from you.
Thank you. And we should mention again your website, jacksoncole.com, and last name K-O-H-L.
Yes.
So what are you working on next?
Well, let's see. I always have a novel in progress, and with the idea of never somehow letting the wind out of my own sails, I almost never tell anyone, no living soul, what it's about. But perhaps it might be about music, perhaps not.
Uh-huh. So I heard this was part of a trilogy, though.
It's part of a trilogy insofar that it is set in the same imaginary place as several other books.
On Long Island.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
And it's set in a mythical town, Pocktog, yet it is, to a great degree, a conjuring of the North Shore Long Island of my childhood that I know so well and love so much.
Uh-huh. Well, we'll have to talk more another time. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah. It really means a great deal to me. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, and congratulations.
Thank you again.
That's Jack Cole on the phone. His new novel is That Iron String, and it's out from the Pocktog Press. I'm Sarah Cahill with you every Sunday evening here on KALW.